Welcome to the Conscious Mental Health Podcast for mental health professionals who are always learning. The Conscious Mental Health Podcast is a series of diverse educational resources for mental health professionals sponsored by the Academy of Integrative Mental Health. The Academy expands knowledge to professionals in the mental health community and beyond using a conscious, experiential, and evidence-based format. Our mission is to deliver comprehensive health and wellness to all by empowering personal and professional growth and confidence. We believe continuing education is an essential aspect of mental health care that is ever evolving and changing, just like the communities we serve. The CMH podcast is part of our efforts to increase access to modern, experiential knowledge across all stages of a clinician's career. We share engaging conversations with skilled therapists, multidisciplinary experts, and advocates committed to thinking outside the box using an integrative approach. Our episodes are similar to our training style in that you receive research-informed content and guided practices, news updates, and other segments to support you in your personal and clinical practice. This podcast is intended to provide information as a resource and is not a substitute for mental health treatment, medical advice, or professional training. And the statements and views shared by the guest are their own.
Hi everyone, it's Laurel Sims Stewart, lead content developer with the Academy of Integrative Mental Health, and this is the Conscious Mental Health Podcast. My guest for this episode is Masha Shapiro, whose name you may recognize from a previous episode. I was so glad to have her back, and this time we are talking all things perinatal mental health. Masha is a perinatal mental health and mood disorder specialist, as well as someone with her own lived experience, so she has such valuable wisdom to share, and I'm so appreciative of her willingness to chat with me and share her story and expertise. Even if you're not a person who has experienced pregnancy, if you're doing any kind of direct clinical work, it's pretty likely that you'll encounter many folks who have. And that's why we felt it was really important to have this conversation and put this information out there. So I think everyone will find something valuable to their work in this conversation. First, though, let's check in about what we've been up to at the Academy for the start of the year. Are you ready to jumpstart your learning and get your clinical toolbox growing in 2024? Our online course library is jam-packed with courses and resources that we know will add value to any clinician's practice. And if you weren't able to attend our most recent live webinar, Liberating Joy from Loss, with the creator of Dreamscaping, Nancy Gershman, don't worry. You can still have the chance to access the recorded version of the training in our online library. You do not want to miss this unique, powerful, and practical 3-hour CE-approved webinar. If you work with late-stage grief, ambiguous grief, disenfranchised loss, non-death-related grief, or pet loss, this training requires no artistic background and is applicable to all licensed mental health providers. LMSWs, LCSWs, LMHCs, LPCCs, LMFTs, LPAS, and ATRBCs, and all of the rest of the letters in our beautiful licensing alphabet. You can access all of our course offerings, including Liberating Joy from Loss, at learn.academyimh.com and get those CEs checked off your list early this year. To learn more about whether your professional license and state are CEU eligible, visit academyimh.com/education. Also, check out the show notes today for a link to sign up for our newsletter, which includes updates on our offerings and new content, resource recommendations, topical articles relevant to your mental health practice, and more. And of course, you can always get access to all of our courses and resources through our website, or by visiting us on Instagram at academy.imh or at cmh.podcast and clicking the link in our bio. And finally, remember that all of our podcast listeners can get 10% off of any individual course or starter pack, including our featured course, 3 Core Integrative, with the code CONVERSATIONS. That's all from me for now. Let's get listening to my conversation with Masha.
Well, Welcome everyone to the Conscious Mental Health Podcast. I'm Laurel and I am back today with Masha Shapiro. For those of you who have been listening to our podcast for a while, you may recognize her name and her voice and her presence from a previous episode. And we're having her back today to talk even more and get more in depth about perinatal, prenatal, postpartum mental health. And Masha, I'm so excited to have you on to talk about this topic because I feel like it's something that I am noticing more conversation about come up in my work, but also that we're really lacking in knowledge and conversation about in a lot of ways. So yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me back, Laurel. And I'm so happy to hear that this is becoming a larger part of the conversation because I think it's been so missed in so many different domains. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll intro you really quick for our listeners that are new to hearing from Masha. Masha is a licensed mental health counselor who has over 14 years of clinical experience. She is the owner of Doors to Freedom Mental Health Counseling Services and We Rise Mental Health Counseling Services. She is currently pursuing her PhD in marriage and family therapy. She's a triple certified trauma professional and certified individual trauma specialist, a complex trauma specialist. So she has lots of experience, but she is also a specialist in perinatal mood disorder. So that's what we're diving into today, like I said. So in our last episode with you, Masha, you shared some about your background and what led you to become passionate about perinatal mental health. Can you revisit this part of your story for us and for our listeners a little bit and just talk to us about how this became something you're invested and interested in?
Yeah, definitely. So last time we met, I discussed how my own experience with trauma shaped my passion to go into this field. What I didn't discuss was the two bouts of perinatal depression that I had with both of my children. So about 10 years ago, I gave birth to my son. And I was always anxious, as I mentioned before. It's just something that, you know, biologically, I probably am susceptible to. And at the first sight of being pregnant, all of my anxiety dissipated. And while I was elated to find, wow, I felt so good, that should have been my first indication that, hey, something is going on here. I had a great pregnancy, uncomplicated birth. But the second I gave birth to my son, I told my doctor, I'm like, I don't feel right. Something feels wrong. And I couldn't figure out what it was. It was a feeling that it's kind of difficult to put into words, and it's different than any episode of depression or anxiety I've ever experienced in the past. I couldn't even put it into words. And for months after, I was kind of overcome with fatigue. I felt so physically ill. And even as a therapist and a mental health practitioner, I never thought for a moment that I had postpartum depression. I thought I was dying of cancer. I thought I had an autoimmune disease. It affected me so physically that I went from doctor to doctor, and they were incorrectly misdiagnosing me with all kinds of things, autoimmune diseases. And later on, only did I realize months later that it was actually postpartum depression, anxiety, OCD. I would have intrusive thoughts that were going off like bombs, but I thought I was just worrying about my health. It was really a mind-blowing experience. And within a year and, you know, getting back into a regular routine and stuff, I was lucky that I made it out. But I still wasn't myself for a while. It really took a while. I'd say it took a few years. I swore off ever having children again. So to my surprise, some years later, I remember driving to work. And at the time, I worked like an hour away from my house. And the whole road kind of went black. And I was so dizzy. And the panic, it's like I started with a panic attack that never stopped. I had no idea I was pregnant, but my body did, right? Yeah. I had it from the moment of conception with my daughter till 3 years after I gave birth to her. So wow. I was never expecting something like that. It was the worst. And they do say that subsequent episodes get worse and worse if you continue to get pregnant. Not for everyone, but they can. At about 6 months, I went on Zoloft because I was so sick. It felt like I was on constant caffeine or speed. It was one huge panic attack that never ended. It was so difficult to describe. Even then, as a second time revisitor to postpartum, I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
So I think that's a struggle that a lot of us face, is that we don't even know that this is happening, because the symptoms feel so confusing and so unlike anything you've ever experienced. And it took a while, but I was able to successfully come out of it. I mean, I'm still traumatized by a lot of what happened, but I'm much more in a much better place, if that makes sense. So that's sure. Why I developed an interest in perinatal mood disorders. And I wanted to make sure that no woman feels alone. It could be such a scary, overwhelming experience, particularly when you're seeing your friends have babies and everyone's fine. And here you are in this dark hole of beyond despair. And it's more than just like, hey, I'm in a bad mood. No, it's so physical. It literally shuts your body down.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that was rough.
I can only imagine. Having two kids myself, I have my own experiences with that. I'm curious for you, you know, as I'm hearing you kind of talk about your story and walking through those two separate experiences, were there things that were catalysts for you of recognizing, oh, like this is postpartum depression and anxiety? Is it like, what helped you come to that realization, since the first one you thought it was like health problems and things like that? So how did you figure it out eventually?
I just wasn't getting better. You know, mm-hmm. Usually a panic attack or something, you'll have a period of like intense fear and horror, and then it lifts. This never stopped. And I went into a period where I couldn't stop crying. So I reached out to a therapist who is actually really well known for this. Her name is Shoshana Bennett. She saved my life. She had two episodes of postpartum depression. She's the author of many books. So she was able to recognize it pretty quickly. Give me that support that I needed. And I promise you, one day you'll look back on this and you won't believe that it happened. And you know, you're just so desperate, like a hungry heart will eat anything at that moment. And I needed to hear that so badly. And I just hung on to that.
Yeah. I feel that in my body when I hear you talk about that. I really do, because it's so real and just so personal when you're in it and you're experiencing it. But when that you have even one person that can offer you that something to grab onto.
Especially because there's this big misconception, oh, you just don't love your baby, or, you know, you didn't want this pregnancy. It is so much more than that. It is so hormonal. I didn't even have time to recognize that it was something related to the baby. And it was in both cases, when I had my son, instantaneous. When I had my daughter, instantaneous. There was not even time. I think it's so biological. It's very scary. People don't realize that. And me, myself, before I got into this field and I'd hear that, I didn't understand what this entailed. So I think the more awareness we have on it, the more beneficial it is for everybody.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because as you're saying, a lot of your experience sounds very different than what we might recognize as professionals, like a typical anxiety or panic attack or even mood disorder experience, right?
Totally. And different than any experience I've even had of anxiety or depressive episodes in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you were talking about your experience with your son, you said when you got pregnant with him, maybe your typical experience of anxiety went away. And that was, you mentioned something about, oh, I should have noticed, or maybe not should have noticed, but like that was kind of a red flag. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, is that something that's common with perinatal mood disorders, that things shift in a specific way
I think a lot of us who do end up getting perinatal mood disorders, not all of us, but a lot of us are susceptible to PMS or PMDD in some way, right? And I think if your hormones have that much of an effect on you, and something obviously was off with my hormones for me to feel so well.
Right.
So obviously when those hormones leave your body, if they're making you feel well, what happens? What's the connection there? Right. And I think with that, I should have been a little more like, should I question this? But it just felt so good. And I was like, wow, this is an amazing experience. And I was just trying to feel into it. I didn't even think of these things. So I said, even though I said I'll never get pregnant again, but in the small case that I do, I will be aware of it this time. But that was a surprise too, because I was sick instantly the second time.
Wow. Yeah. And it is interesting how pregnancies can feel so different, right? So if you have multiple pregnancies, there is a part of you that's like, oh, well, I'll know what to expect the second or third or, you know, whatever time around. And then it can be completely different.
Yeah. You're like, I'll recognize it. No, I'm a therapist. I didn't recognize it. I think that's one of the scarier parts of this disorder, especially if you're working with doctors who don't understand what's going on as well.
Yeah. Did you feel or have a sense that your medical professionals really were misunderstanding what was going on with you as well? Yeah,
absolutely. In fact, they were great and I love them. But one of them told me, you're too pretty to be depressed. And I'll never forget that. I was like kind of horrified. Like, I know he meant well and he didn't mean anything by it, but I was just like, wow, the level of ignorance around this is insane. Yeah. And I remember being like, do you see other people like this at your practice? Like, no. And I felt so alone and so weird and so embarrassed and just, it was horrible. I know he meant well, but I think this is the danger in having doctors not be more educated about what this disease really entails. And I think a lot of this has to do with women's hysteria and women not being taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. I am sure that has something to do with it, right? Because not just with that, but we hear over and over again, all of this new information, which should not be new, but now is coming out about women's pain being dismissed or minimized. And I think even more than physical pain that can be applied to mental and emotional pain. So yeah, I'm so glad that you said that.
Thank you. And absolutely, I agree. And I'm glad that we're even doing this to get more awareness out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you wish people had noticed for you, or what should people start to be aware of, right? Where are we missing the mark and where do we need to take it in the future to grow and get more aware and more wise and more, just like more helpful and supportive around these things for our clients?
That's a great question. And I think statistics show that postpartum depression is one of the most common complications of pregnancy, with as many as 1 in 7 women getting it, and it's the most undertreated. And I think that has to do with maybe a lack of connection or disconnection from provider to provider to provider. There have been countless news stories when a mom goes with her baby to, you know, a pediatrician or a gyno, and she has OCD and she says, I'm having thoughts of harming my baby and they're really distressing me. And what they do is they take the mom and they hospitalize her, yeah, right? Which has traumatized the mom tremendously. And I think there's something that really needs to be done between providers getting adequate training on the difference between OCD and postpartum psychosis. Right. Postpartum OCD, a lot of moms have extreme fear that they're going to harm the baby. And the key here is that they feel distressed about it. With postpartum psychosis, there's usually that distress component is not there. And I think so many people have been, you know, there have been really dangerous consequences as a result of not knowing what is what. And similarly, when someone is psychotic, thankfully experienced that, but I know people who did, and you know, they just feel so good and so elated, which is something that someone might just miss and be like, oh, that's so wonderful, she's enjoying pregnancy. But if people are noticing, hey, there's a big change in what's going on here, either for worse or better, we want to start paying attention. And doctors and pediatricians and anyone who works with women in this setting, really, I think everyone would benefit tremendously from being more educated on that. And you said, you know, what would I have liked? I would have liked someone to have more experience with it and be like, hey, this, it's common. It can be treated. It can be, you're going to be okay. That's all I really needed here. And it sounds simple in retrospect.
Yeah. I mean, it does sound simple, but it's not something that we receive. Mm-hmm. It's not, or as parents, you know, as birthing people, like no one ever said that to me.
Hopefully. And that breaks my heart. And more than that, we're the only country that, like, we give birth in 2 days or I get the heck out of the hospital, you know. In other countries, I think it's in China, for a month, the mom is not doing anything and they're taking care of her baby. It's like, hello, you just had a major surgery where you're cut open one way or the other. And here you are, you have to get up and take care of that baby.
Right.
It's really ludicrous if you think about it. It's insane.
Yeah, it is. I don't know if this is accurate, but I remember reading something that a lot of people who give birth, like that is the equivalent of being in a car accident, like physical trauma on your body, mm-hmm. right? Yep. And we are expected to not only take care of ourselves and heal our own bodies, but take care of this other being that we're just handed with no instruction manual, you know? Mm-hmm. So how could that not, along with all the hormonal changes, affect our emotional and psychological experience?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't know if this was your experience. I know we live in different states, but when I had my kids, I would take them to the pediatrician. And this was literally the extent of the postpartum mental health care I was offered. I had to fill out the Edinburgh scale, right? And so many of our listeners might be familiar with this, but it's a very short questionnaire with some very basic questions about, you know, depression. And it's things like, have you in the past week or two, have you cried more than usual? Or like, have you had thoughts of hurting yourself or your baby? And I think those are important questions to be asking, but I filled it out and I guess I answered in the quote unquote right way, because no one ever followed up with me about it. And my kid's pediatrician gave it to me. My doctor wasn't even the one giving it to me.
Horrible.
No.
Totally. So, same with me. And to be honest, you know, I was experiencing intrusive thoughts and I was afraid to answer the questionnaire, honestly, because I know what the consequences of that are if they're not trained in OCD versus I never wanted to actually harm my kids. Some people right. do. But I was like, if I answer this way, I knew exactly how not to answer that questionnaire. And that worries me for a lot of mothers that are not being as honest about what's really going on and the stigma behind it, right? Because in addition to the consequences that can ensue from being honest, I think a lot of moms are afraid to be shamed or judged for feeling that way. I know I did.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Why is this happening to me? Everyone could just go and have a normal pregnancy and here I am. And you're already beating yourself up so badly over it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because we do, we look out. I remember looking at so many of my friends who were enjoying their maternity leave and just having, you know, resting, or it seemed like they were resting and cuddling and snuggling. And I just felt the total opposite of all of those feelings, you know? And so it's just, and I don't think my experience by any means was an isolated one, right? But you feel so isolated. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that. We get into our heads and we're afraid to talk about 100%. What we're experiencing, even as a mental health professional. Like you said, I was afraid to talk about what I was experiencing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Especially like people around you don't understand. And I'm sorry that you felt that way, but something that I want to tell you that might help. There was a post and I remember this girl, I was looking at social media and I was like, look how happy everybody looks. And I'm suffering, kind of similarly to what you said. And she posted a picture with her family. She goes, pictures can be deceiving. 2 minutes before this smiling photo, I was contemplating suicide.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And my heart went out to her, but it also was like, look, not everything we see is real. And probably because of the fact that so many people aren't as willing to discuss it.
Right. Yeah.
And stigma. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like, and thank you for sharing that. Like, I think that that's powerful and important and impactful. It sounds like really what would be a very helpful first step would just be for professionals of all shapes and sizes and kinds that work with parents to just start that conversation, not wait for the client or the patient to start that conversation, but to go ahead and start it and offer some thoughts about how normal that is, and let them know, you know, it is a safe space to share and they won't be punished or penalized if they're experiencing something so scary and harmful.
Absolutely. And that was so well said.
Yeah. Yeah. When you work with parents and with mothers, what are the most important things that you like focus on and consider? What are some things clinicians, like mental health clinicians, don't consider enough when it comes to that ongoing work with perinatal clients?
Great question. I think that all mental health practitioners should have certified, some kind of certification or advanced training to be able to work with women here. Like I said before, this is so hormonally and biologically based that it transcends all of our experiences with what we think of as typical depression or anxiety. It's so severe. And I think, you know, in addition to adequate training and things of that nature, I think it's very important to first be able to identify risk factors, because some people don't even know what's going on. And that can be previous episodes of mental health history. Are they prone to past episodes of anxiety, depression, bipolar, anything like that? Do they have PMS or PMDD? Right. And I think as mental health practitioners, to completely normalize it, take the stigma out, create a safety plan should this happen, depending on what stage the client is presenting to us with, right? Let them know that they'll be okay. Consider the idea of creating groups, because the reality piece is so important. To me, it was one of the most healing pieces, is just knowing someone else is out there experiencing this too. And maybe developing an alliance with a reproductive psychiatrist, because in some of these more severe cases, medication is often necessary. So I think that would be one of the best ways to make sure that we're doing everything we can to stay on top, and cross collaboration with other physicians that are taking care of the mother.
Yeah. I think that collaborative piece and that connection piece is so important. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's the part that really sticks out to me, is just that feeling of, like you mentioned at the start of our conversation, people sort of just being all disconnected and operating in silos, and then the parent, the mother feels disconnected. And if we could just come together and talk about these things and collaborate professionally with physicians and with the hospital, I love the idea of groups. I think that's amazing. I will say it wasn't a therapy group, but when I had my first son, a mom's group like saved my life. You know, I mean, I really truly believe that. And it wasn't anything elaborate. It was just simple. You know, it was just being together with their moms.
Totally. And right, I bet you felt a real sense of belonging, and you can learn from those other moms and see how everybody else is handling what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned training in, you know, understanding the hormonal components and the biological components. Can you talk just a little bit about that and kind of maybe break down a little bit what is kind of changing and going on that can affect our experience so drastically?
Sure. So hormones have an effect on our neurotransmitters, right? So that's what we see in hormonal fluctuations with things like PMS and PMDD. For some reason, not known to me, I don't know how biology works, but why did they make that, right? Why whoever created us made it that way? Because, you know, for some women that are susceptible, any little fluctuation, right, impacts your serotonin and your epinephrine and your dopamine levels. And I think that can cause catastrophic events. And imagine, I think it's about 400 times we produce the amount of progesterone. So imagine having PMS and you already feel, you know, especially for those of us that have PMDD, like myself, you feel very irritated, to say the least. Now take that times 400 and imagine that huge dump in hormones, right? What's going to happen? You're going to feel, I mean, probably 10 times worse if you're one of those that are susceptible to the changes of that, right? And I think there's a very strong biological component to a lot of postpartum depression. There are also lifestyle factors for other people that can cause it as well. We see dads getting depressed from, I do think they're kind of different depression, right? Because one is coming strictly from hormonal changes and one is coming from, you know, lifestyle changes. And I think depending, yeah, I mean, both can be severe. I think it really depends on what lens we're looking at it from.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I think that hormonal component has to be considered. A lot of times what I had seen, and I think what a lot of folks see and really kind of just think about, is this idea of the baby blues, right? Like we you have the baby, and of course, hormones are changing and shifting inside of your body because you're going from being a pregnant person to now and no longer a pregnant person. And so a lot of folks just think, oh, you know, this is, if I feel sad, if I feel overwhelmed, like this is just the baby blues, it'll go away, right? Or I shouldn't talk to somebody about this because this is something that I should have expected would happen. You know, this is a normal experience in some ways, and I shouldn't make a fuss about it. So what's the difference? Like, talk to our listeners about where that shift takes place from like typical postpartum experience to more than just that.
Sure. And I think, thanks for bringing that up. That's a great point. One of the reasons I didn't notice what was going on was because I was like, maybe this is what people are supposed to feel like after they have their kids. I didn't know. Baby blues typically start pretty immediately and are usually gone within 2 to 3 weeks. And basically what we're seeing with postpartum depression, it doesn't go away so quickly, and it can tend to be a lot more severe, right? So I would say length of time is a big consideration in distinguishing whether we have baby blues or whether we have postpartum depression.
Right. So if it's ongoing, right, if it's lasting way longer than just that 3 week, 2 or 3 week period, we can't seem to shake it. Yeah.
And if it's more intense than what, you know, I think they describe baby blues as feeling like sad and maybe crying a bit and stuff. And those are all symptoms of postpartum depression. But if we're finding that it's getting more intense, right? Because it does tend to get more intense and the symptoms are getting worse progressively instead of better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there things that you talk with your perinatal clients about as far as things that their partners or support people can help them look out for and watch for other than just that?
Absolutely. Because, you know, this is hard for fathers too. Fathers go through a lot kind of trying to support their wives. But I think there are fathers out there that just don't understand what's going on with the woman. So I think that couples therapy is really important, or family therapy, to kind of explain, hey, this is what's going on. And this is actually really biological. And, you know, to get a father the support that he needs, because it can be really challenging to give that kind of round the clock care to someone that is going through something like this. Right. So I think it's important to educate the whole family on what this can look like and how it can manifest in different forms. Right? Education is a really big piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah. When do clients start really to seek that mental health care that you've noticed? Like, or is it coming after their partner is saying like, ooh, babe, something's really wrong, we got to figure this out? Or are they seeking it out? Are doctors sending them? And have you maybe seen a shift at all in this over the past few years? And if not, you know, maybe talk a little bit about that for us.
I've seen a larger shift. I've definitely had a few clients that are like, hey, I'm worried that this might be what this is. So I've definitely have that, but more than that, I would say, the general kind of thing that I'm seeing is people come in when they don't know what's going on with them. Kind of just like I was, they're like, I've been crying a lot, but what is this? Is this normal? Is this not normal? So sometimes people come in really late in the process when they can't take it anymore. Right. Because in addition to having a new baby, the last thing you're thinking is like, let me go get therapy for myself. I'm not supposed to take care of myself. I'm supposed to take care of my baby. And, you know, it's so important. If you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your baby, and you're still a good mother, whether you have this or you don't. Right. And that's like the main message that I stress to my clients, because they feel so ashamed that they're even needing to seek this treatment when this is going on. And it's like heartbreaking to watch, both as their therapist and someone who's been through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if I have clients that, let's say, are looking to get pregnant and have expressed to me that they have PMS, I will say, hey, there is a risk. I'm not trying to scare you. I just want you to be prepared, because in case anything like that happens, we can have a safety plan. Right. Yeah. Which sometimes I hate doing, because I don't want to put that in people's heads, but I also don't want them to have a baby and be like, what the heck happened to me?
Right. Sure. I mean, I think that's really important. And I know that that phrasing can feel jarring to a lot of people, but I think it's also a conversation that if we can be just bold enough to have, sounds like can save lives, you know? So sometimes we have to have that uncomfortable conversation and say, hey, I'm like you're saying, I'm not trying to scare you, but let's be real about the possibility here because I wish someone had been real with me.
100%. You know? I had no idea I was even at risk for this, even though I clearly had anxiety and things in the past. I had no idea. I was like, no, I'll be fine. No. So I wish somebody had said, hey, this may happen. This is what we're going to do if this happens. Don't worry. We're going to be prepared. If you start feeling any of these symptoms, just give me a call. This is what we're going to do.
Right. When you do get a chance to work with a client who kind of has that prep time and you can have those conversations, what might a safety plan like that look like?
Sure. So if that was the case and someone might have that, we would talk to a reproductive psychiatrist and get medication on board. You know, some mild cases of postpartum don't need it, but more than not, I see that many cases need it. So I think that's one of the most important things, a safety plan where we're involving family members, where we're finding either a family member or a partner that can sleep with the baby every other night, because we found that getting at least 5 hours of sleep is protective for serotonin levels, particularly postpartum when you're most sensitive to experiencing these changes. And, you know, us moms, we're up most of the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm like mind blown by that one fact. I'm so glad you shared that because I went through a period where I couldn't even remember the last time I got 5 straight hours of sleep, you know, and I think that's a very normal, common experience for a lot of new parents. You know, that's not certainly not supposed to be like a woe is me. I think a lot of moms, especially if you're nursing, like they tell you to wake the baby up every 2 to 3 hours if the baby's not waking up. And so what does that leave you with? 5 straight hours of sleep sounds like a miracle in some cases. But if you know that that is a protective factor, I'm sure you can figure out ways to prioritize it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And like my client, you know, some of us can have different budgets. And one of my clients just got a night nurse in preparation of that. Mm-hmm. Others, hopefully we can rely on family members and our spouse to help with that in that case. If we're partnered, if not, maybe a friend, right? Because I think that that is the most instrumental piece of advice, particularly like let's not forget, we're also recovering from major surgery. And it's like, wake up that same night when you get home from the hospital and care for the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, in the news, I just saw somewhere in New York City, they have a place that you can check in for like a few weeks after you give birth. And I'm sure it's insanely expensive, where they take care of you, they cook all your meal, all of the stuff. And I think that that is so nice. And I wish we could make that more affordable and accessible to people that need that. That can go such a long way in helping and maybe even offsetting or preventing some of the symptoms of postpartum depression.
Oh, I can only imagine. I remember, I think I've seen a similar, maybe it's the same facility, like a video. And I remember watching it and just thinking, oh my goodness, that would have been a dream, you know? And I don't know how much it costs. I'm sure it's cost prohibitive for some folks, many folks, but there could certainly be a spectrum of services that are similar. It would be amazing if everybody could have that, but it doesn't have to be even to that extent. It sounds like some basic support services for people that both have partners, but especially who don't have maybe all of those social and family supports would make just like a world of difference for so many women.
Totally. And in fact, my main goal, besides for my private practices, is to open a place for women. I don't know what that would look like yet or the specifics, but something that would offer the ongoing support that's needed and what I wish I had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that would be amazing. When you open that, you let me know because I will be at the grand opening. That sounds incredible. Oh my goodness. That sounds incredible. Is there anything else that we as like mental health professionals can prioritize better to support all parents in their journey, like before, during, after pregnancy and birth. You know, we see our clients mostly not in their home, right? But we are still very much on their support team in so many ways. So what can we do?
I think basically the same stuff. I think one, obtain adequate training, be able to tell the difference between different forms and symptoms of postpartum depression. Everything's kind of under the umbrella postpartum depression, but there's postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD, right? Postpartum psychosis, postpartum PTSD. So it's really important to be able to break that up and really understand what we're working with. Decrease the stigma, create safety plans, recognize risk factors, involve families, involve other practitioners, and, you know, if possible, recommend to a group depending on where they are in their pregnancies. But I think those are the main things, is really becoming educated and really being able to provide adequate support to someone who feels so terrified and so alone, or in the pre-planning phase, like, hey, this can happen. And sometimes there are no risk factors. In fact, many cases where women become psychotic, there are no risk factors. It just happens. Yeah. I mean, some of them had bipolar or, you know, didn't need any sleep, but some, it happens with no previous mental health history at all.
Right. Which is important, I think, it sounds like, to know, because that makes it even more important that we're having these conversations with all of the parents that we work with, right? Not just parents who might have more risk factors than others, but just kind of just going ahead and putting it out there for everybody so that they're aware. Yeah.
Totally. And more specifically, I urge practitioners to know the difference between OCD and psychosis, because that seems to be the one thing that I'm noticing gets confused over and over and over again, right? Where, you know, it's just a bunch of intrusive thoughts about harming the baby, but parents are so distressed and they're like, oh, she's going to hurt the baby, we're going to hospitalize her, where the baby, the parent, that's so traumatizing to a parent who really wasn't going to hurt the baby.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, absolutely. And I know, you know, a lot of folks listening are probably familiar with, some of the, at least the basics of OCD, even if they don't work specifically with OCD, that intrusive thoughts are very much present, but it is probably harder to differentiate when we are like mandated reporters in many cases, and we kind of have that fear filter of, oh, now there's a baby involved. I'm kind of sort of like more on my guard. And so reducing our fear sounds important as well, right?
Mm-hmm. And
having that education can help. Are there other differences? It sounds like the distress is a really important marker between the difference in postpartum OCD and postpartum psychosis. Are there any other things that you would watch out for to differentiate those two?
Well, I would say, you know, when we go into a state of psychosis, we're kind of losing touch with reality. And with OCD, you're too in touch with kind of reality, even though it's the disease of doubt.
Mm-hmm.
Like, will I do this? Will I do this? And it's kind of like that. And I would say with postpartum psychosis, there's not much time to like really question, like, am I going to do this? Or, right, there's a lot of times in that kind of psychotic state there, you tend to see mania, which could present as like really high elated mood or irritability, could be mixed. And they're like, most of the time they think that they need to, you know, harm their baby to save them in some way or save themselves. Whereas the OCD mom is usually depressed. And of course, every practitioner has to be sure to do a thorough assessment, not just base it off of the things that I'm saying, but
certainly
what we look for. Like, I've had moms tell me, right, hey, I had to put my baby down. I thought I was going to harm my baby, and they would run outside. And that is like your typical intrusive thought and compulsion to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
So thankfully, for me, it's really important to be able to recognize that. And then, you know, definitely have family sessions to see how this has been affecting the mother. Do you see any big changes in behavior? What are you noticing? Two episodes, actually, of infanticide just happened in New York. One was a famous oncologist. Great. 4 months later, she killed herself and her baby. They don't know if it was postpartum depression or psychosis. I'm leaning towards psychosis. I don't know the whole story, but, you know, in that situation, I'm sure they did everything they could too. I think her parents were staying, and I read that the cops were called to her house on various occasions, but I don't know what happened with that. It was truly heartbreaking. And then I think in Massachusetts or somewhere near there, there was a woman that was struggling ongoing with her mental health. And they said she was feeling fine, but she like sent her husband out to get food and then tried to kill herself and all three children. And she was left paralyzed from the waist down, but the children passed away. And then these poor moms have to live in that reality when they like recover and come into themselves of, oh my God, what did I do?
Right.
So I think really being able to recognize those signs quickly, and usually psychosis happens very quickly. I think within the first month, just really being able to recognize and differentiate and making sure that if anyone's feeling badly, that there's a supportive person around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's going on.
Yeah. And I think also it sounds to me like continuing to check in, not just checking in one time and hearing, oh, okay, you seem to be doing well. Like, sounds good. Let's keep moving on and trucking on, but continuing to revisit that conversation and not assume that you're just out of the woods, because it also sounds like that can last for a significantly long time. You know, it's not just 6 months or even a year. It can last well beyond that. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I mean, for me, the second time around was my whole pregnancy plus 3 years out. And they say in postpartum recovery, it's always 2 steps forward, 1 step back. So I'd have days where I'd started feeling really well again. And then boom, it would come back, particularly when I started first getting my my period back. Right. And I would feel like I was re-experiencing everything from my pregnancy during those times. And it took months until that kind of leveled out. So it's you never really know when you're out of the woods. And then one day you look back and I was so happy to see something as simple as like my light on my table. I'm like, it looks so pretty today, because it was without all of these disturbing, dark emotions attached to it. And like literally my change in perception was completely altered. Like everything literally looked dark and narrow. It was terrifying. So, to that, continued check-ins are very important to make sure like, hey, where are we at? How are we feeling? What's going on? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. When you've mentioned making sure that we as professionals have appropriate training and appropriate knowledge, you know, I think obviously in an hour podcast, that's certainly not enough time to extensively get into all of the nitty-gritty that we need to know. And this is more just like a crash course in understanding. Are there places that folks can seek out really great training if they're interested in this, or they are noticing that this is coming up and they want to have more awareness around it, that you would recommend?
Postpartum Support International has a lot of fabulous different ways to do this. And just to get acquainted with this, this isn't professional, but there was a documentary that I saw, When the Bow Breaks, I think. Trying to remember the exact title. Fantastic. And you will see so many different resources there as well.
Cool.
But I have both.
Okay, awesome. And we'll put some links to those too, because, you know, I think as we're talking, I do think, especially, you know, as the Academy of Integrative Mental Health, like that's so important to us, is to have true knowledge and training and background and not just sort of glide through it, but really make sure that we're aware and we are educated as clinical professionals. So yeah, that's super helpful. We talk a lot about the mind-body sort of connection, typically in therapy and in therapy work. And I know, especially when we had our conversation in our last episode about trauma work, we talked a lot about like how the body is integrated into all of this. And I'm curious what you've noticed under that umbrella when it comes specifically to working with perinatal mental health. Is it the same? Is it very different? You know, what has been your experience there?
I would say it really depends on the level of illness, because sometimes when postpartum can get so intense that, you know, kind of paying attention to your body can seem like such an overwhelming task to do or to engage in. But in more like milder, you know, cases, I think that working with your body can really help regulate, like, you know, anxiety, and it can lower blood pressure if you don't already have low blood pressure from the pregnancy. So there are different ways to incorporate that. But I've seen a lot of moms that are just so kind of, they feel so far gone, and it's so difficult for them to even focus on that. So the mind-body connection is something I focus on a little less with postpartum depression than I typically do with trauma, although it's still very important when the mom gets to a place where she's able to kind of process that.
Right. That absolutely makes sense. And I'm actually really glad that you're talking about that, because I have had, an experience for myself and feeling very disconnected, you know, from my body, because it's so different after you give birth. Like it feels almost foreign at times. And so my perception is that for many clients, it would be very difficult to go straight into that work after having a baby.
Totally. It really is. It's a disease like no other, really, especially if you've, you know, faced different kind of mental health challenges in your life, and here you are with this, and you're like, what is this? It's its own kind of entity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there any other like integrative tools or collaborative tools or outside pieces that you find complement this kind of work especially well?
Really depends on what's being presented. But a lot of times, especially with the disconnected piece, and, you know, a lot of moms experience that. So when moms are able to kind of have a session and take this information in, something that I like to do is an NLP technique where we're changing kind of the color, shape, and size of whatever we're feeling. So if you're feeling disconnected, I'd say, okay, where are you feeling it in your body? And they might say, I'm out of body. And I'd say, okay, what does this out of body feel like to you? Like, what color is it? What shape is it? What size is it? And then what we'll do is we'll often, like, so let's say somebody says it's blue, it's long, it's it looks like a baseball bat, you know. We will soften the blue down to a pale blue, then to a white. And then we will shrink it, and we will do kind of this really cool technique where we put it in a jar and we watch it float up and out. What's cool about that is the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between real and perceived reality. So when you're engaging in this kind of mind body full on meditation and visualization exercise, it actually really relieves a lot of the symptoms in that moment.
Mm. Wow. That's beautiful. I love that. What an amazing visualization, and just like, it sounds like it is so powerful, but so simple and immediate. And I think, like, for so many of our moms, like, obviously it's a journey and a process to move through this time and figure out what matrescence, that becoming a mother, like, looks like for you. But sometimes we just need a moment of relief in the middle of that as well. You know,
I can help somebody if they have the 5 minutes just to be like, okay, let me work with my body in this way if I'm feeling like I can.
Yeah. Mm. Cool. Very cool. Oh, that sounds amazing. Is there anything else that you feel like is just important that we haven't hit on yet, or that you would want other professionals who are listening to this to know or to understand or to be aware of when it comes to this work?
You've probably hit on it already, but I think it's really important that professionals really, really consider making or normalizing this experience for their clients as much as possible, because it's such a scary, isolating, and ostracizing kind of feeling that can happen for clients. So really being able to be present and making clients feel safe and comfortable enough to share their experiences with us is the biggest takeaway that I can say.
Yeah, I hear that. I think that's so real. Absolutely.
So real. It would have helped me so much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of goes back to some of those conversations we've had before, you know, even in our last episode where we just talked about being a human and sitting across from another human and sharing an experience and helping them to feel validated and cared for in their experience.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Is there a practice that you can share? I know we kind of did this last time, and we do this a lot at the end of our episodes. Is there any kind of a practice that you could share with us and our listeners that might give us a taste of this work more directly as we start to wrap up our time today?
So I think with that, same thing that we just did, the NLP exercise for visualizing what's going on, the kind of going limp in our body. I think it really depends based on what, you know, the client with postpartum is presenting with. If it's labored breathing, and sometimes a lot of my clients have expressed that they have trouble breathing or they're feeling like they're having their panic attacks are so severe. Something really simple that you can do is to exhale for 8 seconds, inhale for 4, and then exhale for 8. And why this is so effective, when we are so anxious, we actually tend to be holding our breath and we think we need to get more air in, which is creating this cycle where you're still feeling short of air. So the actual proper way to do it is to exhale first. And what I love about this is you feel like immediate relief. And it's quick and easy for moms to be able to regulate in that way, right? And then depending on if they're feeling better or what state they're in, we do a lot of EFT tapping, which is cool. That would just basically be like identifying the emotion. So it would be like this fear, right? Or whatever's going on. And we like to cross over here for bilateral processing. And then we just name the emotion, this fear. I feel so afraid. I feel so alone, right? My personal thought is the collarbone. And what's cool about this, you can do a SUDS check-in and be like, how anxious am I feeling on a scale of 1 to 10 right now? And then when you go ahead and you do this, it's really incredible because it's working with acupressure and meridian kind of points in your body. So you're pairing fear with a relaxation response. You can feel the benefits of it immediately. So this is a very neat kind of way to check in or, you know, tap on that if you have enough time.
Yeah. And how amazing, you know, would that be as a mom? I would imagine, you know, as a mom, I'm imagining like if you need a tool right at home, not even in the therapy session, but at home, like in your kitchen, 2 a.m., you can't get the baby to stop crying. You know, you just need something and you're grasping for anything. So you can bring your body system, like down regulate that. And then that helps your baby. Right. I mean, what an incredibly simple but awesome tool to gift to our clients that they can use for themselves and be empowered to use for themselves.
I hope that helps someone. It personally has helped me through so many points in my life. Before I was nervous or had to make like a big presentation, and it would make me feel so much calmer. But the main point, you can do it in a couple of ways, but the main points are eyebrow, right? Under eye, under nose, above chin, and the collarbone, which is like right where the little hole is right here. I personally love this and it feels incredibly relaxing, right? So I try it on yourself, see if it helps you. It's been really, really helpful for me.
Cool. Thank you so much for sharing. Well, Masha, it's been wonderful to have you back and I've loved this conversation. I love talking about, this topic, especially is something that's very near and dear to my heart. As I know it is as to yours and so many of us who are parents or have people in our lives who are parents and have gone through that changing journey. So I just really appreciate you being here and sharing your wisdom with us. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you for having me on. It's so important to talk about this topic and I always love talking to you, Laurel.
Yeah. Just as a reminder for our folks who are listening, where can people find you? Where can they look up and get to know more about you and your work?
Totally. My website, which is www.werisenyc.com. I'm also on ZocDoc and Zen Care and Psychology Today.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much again, Masha. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes for our listeners as well, so you all can get a chance to check out more about Masha and her work and get in touch with her if you want to hear more about what she has to offer. And just thank you again so much for your time, Masha. We will look forward to having you back hopefully someday.
Thank you. Me too.
Bye.
Thanks so much for joining us today. Make sure to check out the show notes for all of the resources we mentioned in the episode, including links to where you can learn more about Masha and her work, and those perinatal mental health support links we discussed at the end of the episode. And remember, we always love to hear from you. Is there a topic you want to learn more about, or a guest you think would be perfect for our show? How can we support you as a mental health professional in your own learning and growing journey? Reach out to us at academyimh.com or send us a DM on Instagram at academy.imh or at cmh.podcast. As always, take good care of yourself, and we'll talk again soon.